Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close. There.
Welcome to Agrabah, city of mystery. Of enchantment.
The finest merchandise this time of ever shown. On sale today. Come on down.
Hello and welcome to a somber Skanon podcast. This will be number 21, so legal age for drinking in the US. What? Yeah. And we're joined by Miss Brogan Hayes.
Hi.
So that's me, Belle. Jay and Philip as normal. And and we actually have a female. We found one willing to talk to us.
We don't have to play with drinks for us, though.
Yes.
Yeah, we're old enough. I'm 21. Yeah. Sorry, that came out a lot creepier than the sound of I'm going to retract that particular statement. Let's fix that in post.
So, in lieu of our usual movie news, we're dedicating this week's podcast to the late, great Robin Williams. And so, we're going to start there, because I believe we'll have a good bit to say about the great man. He was found dead overnight of an apparent suicide. He had been battling with alcoholism and depression for a number of years, basically all his adult life. And it's just tragic. It's absolutely tragic. Only 63 years of age, leaves behind wife and children, family and friends, and a world of people who loved his films and loved his comedy.
Oh, when you put it like that, this is just getting me even more down.
And his drama as well, in fairness.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's actually really dispiriting. I found out last night, so I had 1 o'clock in the morning, so I was sleep mixed for about an hour. So it was kind of like, yeah, this is great. This has really cheered me up for a little bit. It sucks. I mean, there's a lot of good films that we can look back on and enjoy, but favourites?
Oh, everybody will have too many to mention. I put up my list earlier on the site of top five performances, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're my favourite films. I don't know. If we go around the table, what do we think? Favorites?
Oh, I'm a big fan of Fisher King. I thought he was brilliant, and that was the first time I saw him do a serious role was in the Fisher King. And then I grew up on Mork and Mindy, and Mrs. Doubtfire was a perennial classic in my house when I was a kid. So,
Most everybody's house, I think.
Yeah.
I was saying to somebody earlier, and actually it was you, Jay.
Excellent.
Yeah. You, whoever you are.
That's somebody.
Yes. Who else could actually have pulled that role off? It must have been written for him, or at least with him in
mind. Certainly interpreted to the only way you can see him working, because he makes it work brilliantly.
Yeah. You could say that about any of his films, though. I mean, think about it. You've got who else would play Peter Pan? Who else could play his role in The Birdcage the way that he does? It's hard to name a list of people.
It's such a force of nature that he inhabits the thing. You can't imagine it any other way. I'm sure there are other ways of doing it. But would it be as good? Would it be as effective?
Well, certainly not. I can't imagine how anybody would try Mrs. Doubtfire. And he's the only one with the energy and the lack of... He didn't seem to have much ego about himself.
Certainly not when it came to the performance.
No. He threw himself into it. And the results are there for all to see. That's a marvellous comedic performance.
He's the greatest non-Python who's to perform as a Python. Yeah. He's essentially a Python, but not one of the troop.
They already had one American, so they couldn't bring him in as
well. That's true. Yeah. But I keep going back to... I would have seen... I would say to you, I'd have grown up on Mork and Mindy on TV, and its inherent silliness and... fun.
It was a spin-off of Happy Days.
Which ridiculous.
I didn't actually know that.
God.
No,
I somehow missed that particular piece of trivia until I read your
obituary.
Yeah.
How did that come off Happy Days?
Happy Days, I think we're past the jump of the chart. Would imagine.
He turns up at Fonzie's door at some point.
Yeah.
And he's an alien. And people loved him so much that they gave him his own show.
The outfits and the driving around, the car, the convertible Jeep. I'd never seen a convertible Jeep except in that show.
It was very strange. But I would have seen, I would have been just sort of 15, a little after I imagine the video would have been when Dead Poets Society came out. So that would have been just before I would have gone to see 15 Sun in the cinema. I think it was, I presume it was 15th here, Dead Poets Society.
Yeah,
I would have thought so. Yeah. I would have missed out. But I remember seeing it at the time and being blown away by it. Now, as I got older, the film is still corny on occasions and whatever, but still very enjoyable. And Robin Williams is absolutely superb in it. And he really does now, reins it in and just lets that kind of humanity that he has kind of show. And he's fantastic in it.
Well, that's one thing you can say about all of his performances. You know, they may be silly. Like, I just keep coming back to the genie in Aladdin. Mm. He's this madcap whirlwind of energy, but underneath there's this layer of vulnerability and heartbreak because he wants to be free. Mm. So it's something that he brought to all of his roles.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. 16 hours of ADR.
23.
Is it 23?
23.
Good God.
Yeah. He did something like 56 voices for Aladdin.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, because the opening monologue is him.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well. Yeah.
But then all of his impressions that he peppered through as well.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. Ah. I read somewhere that because of how much ADR he did, it actually discounted Aladdin from being nominated for a Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar.
Yeah, yeah, there was too much ad-libbing in it that
good
it wasn't.
That's a very veiled compliment.
Yeah, but would it have got one?
Probably.
Was it original, though, because it was based on the Arabian Nights adapted, folk story? Yeah. So
but having said that, though, I suppose the story is too good to... It doesn't matter whether it would ever not in the actual thing.
Still, he's he's the one thing everybody remembers instantly from that film. Well, that and, you know, giant snakes and such things. But yeah, primarily Robin.
Katie Price and Peter Andre ruining
himself. Niall!
I don't get that reference.
they covered as a duet a whole new world.
Oh, I'm really, really glad I missed that.
I wish
I'll
I
second
had.
That. That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's a thought I really didn't want in my head.
But, yeah, he won the Oscar for Good Will Hunting, but he had 3 nominations before that.
Yeah.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah.
Dead Poets Society.
Awakenings?
No, he was Golden Globe nominated for Awakenings.
Now, the other one was... Oh, it escapes me.
I have a list here. Here, have a look.
Fisher King.
It was Fisher King.
Was it Fisher King? Yeah. I was marvellous in that.
Actually, interesting enough, just like talking about like when I was saying that I'd watched that post the entire time, Awakenings, actually, weirdly enough, which is a film that I don't think is particularly great, but it was the first one that made me cry.
Really?
When Robert De Niro, because I still loved Robert De Niro, my idol when I was younger, starts regressing. And made me very sad when I was younger.
Yeah.
But now it makes me cry for different reasons. It's so mannered. And anyway, I'm not going to do that. But and then, like, you get things like my mother absolutely adored What Dreams May Come. It was her favourite film.
That's a visually. That's visually stunning.
And it's as soapy and schmaltzy as you want.
That's always a risk that you're when you go through Williams' CV. He had a penchant for going for stuff that had slight small cheese side, at least. Mm. Sometimes it completely overwhelmed the film.
Yeah, it did. And it certainly did.
It certainly contributed to a lot of maybe less reputable choices, especially in the later part of his career.
But you can still admit that even though the films may have been schmaltzy or tacky or whatever it was, that Robin Williams was still amazing in them.
He's never less than watchable.
No,
never.
No.
You know that in Tropic Thunder, that character, that simple Jack thing, that was Ben Stiller pretending to be Robin Williams pretending to be somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Probably a parody of Jack or something.
Yeah. Which, thanks for mentioning Jack, because that's an awful film.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, that's a low point
for Coppola. For everybody. It's a long way for cinema, that is, really. Yeah. It is, though. I mean,
I don't know, Coppola some other low points there.
He does.
But I don't know. I think that's as low as it's ever been. That is the lowest. It definitely is.
Nice idea. It didn't work.
Yeah.
It was horrid. It was absolutely horrid. Just anyone think better now.
Yeah.
I'd say one of my favourite Robin Williams performances would have to be Hook. And I know it's a film that not many people like, but...
I actually don't at all.
I was a huge Peter Pan fan, and like I said earlier on, if you think of an adult man playing Peter Pan, who comes straight to mind? Robin Williams. Mm. And I just thought his energy in it was great, and his relationship with the Lost Boys, and the way he just played with the role and played with the childlike innocence of it, I just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, you're right. He definitely would have been probably the only person who could have played it. Mm. Now, Michael Jackson wanted to, but Spielberg.
Well, it's an extraordinary alternative universe, that is, isn't it?
Oh,
I'd probably watch it.
I don't know if
no,
kids
would
be allowed to watch it.
I think that may have been used as evidence in court.
Yeah, yeah.
Had he done that one?
Indeed, indeed.
Oh, it's not good, though. It's just it's one you remember from your childhood with fond memories, but if you look back on it, no.
See, the things that I have in common with Dawson Leary, that's another one. I have a poster of Hulk on my wall.
Yes, thank you. I absolutely love Hulk.
Yeah.
The last one I'd mentioned, just because I was going through kind of filmography today and a markup, was Deconstructing Harry, whereas it's almost like non-performance.
That's
because
he's out
of focus.
It's
totally
fantastic.
And literally blurred out by Woody Allen, and it's so wonderful.
Mm. Yeah.
Because you just listen to him and you can just barely see him on the edges.
It's fantastic.
It's
a very
good film as well.
It's one of my favourite
Woody Allen's. One of the darker ones and kind of slightly weirder ones, but it's really, really good. Mm. And it is one of my favourites as well, but it was great to see him doing that. Kind of, and his voice is just fabulous. I loved it.
It feels really sorry for him.
Yeah.
I would also have to go out of my way to mention One Hour Photo.
Oh my
yeah.
God, I
that's,
love that movie.
For my money, that is his best performance.
Terrifying.
But also extremely sympathetic.
Mm.
All the way through, you just felt so sorry for that guy.
Until the camera pans back and you see the wall of photos and then you go, there's something wrong here.
But at the same time, just when you realize that what he's going through, it's one of the most heartbreaking portraits of loneliness, just pure loneliness,
yeah.
I can recall put on film.
And in the same vein, Insomnia was one that really stuck with me as well.
Those came out the same year.
Yeah.
He was really going dark that
yeah,
around
Death
that
time. Death to Smoochie as well.
Yes, indeed.
I love Death to Smoochie. Insomnia, I have problems with.
I love Insomnia.
I love
remakes go.
I'm not a fan of it. It's one of my lesser Nolan works for me, but it's fine. It's okay.
It's relatively conventional as Nolan's films
yeah.
go, but it's exquisitely shot.
It is.
Great performances. Pacino decides to rein it in for once.
For
I think
once.
He shouts just once in the entire thing, which is impressive.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but I'm hoping it was a wah.
No, it wasn't a new one.
That's very disappointing.
One line that always sticks with me from Insomnia is when he says to Al Pacino, "If human life is so precious, then why is it so fucking fragile?" And I think that's a quote that's really appropriate today.
It's indeed.
It indeed is. It is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bumming me out again.
No, sorry.
It's all right.
How did he get a Golden Raspberry nomination for Death to Smoochie? Did they
watch it? It's very OTT, but it's not bad per se.
I mean, it's childhood TV.
It's a Danny DeVito movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It is. That's
it's completely.
I adored it.
I love it. It's completely
it's
over
a strange
the top.
Little gem.
It is.
Strange.
It really is.
It's completely over the top. Williams plays this disgraced children's TV presenter who goes on a mission to
Rainbow Randolph.
He goes on a mission to take down the person who took his place, and it's Edward Norton. And it's just brilliant because Edward Norton's got this wide-eyed sort of innocence to him, which you'd normally associate with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And Robin Williams is
so
just
better, yeah.
He just wants to burn everything.
How much fun that
is! It
yeah.
is.
Norton plays his purple rhino.
Rhino.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines of the film is when Williams refers to him as, "You bastard son of Barney!"
I'm rewatching that this evening.
Lines like that, it's great.
It's brilliant. Totally overlooked and should be something that you would watch in your Robin Williams retrospective, I think.
Oh, also, it definitely would be. Yeah.
I'd point out problematic too. I think the plotting goes off at the end. But
I could live with that.
Absolutely.
So much
so
fun.
It is fun.
Like, yeah.
It is. And also, a rare cinematic outing for Jon Stewart.
That's true.
The Faculty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I said rare.
Yeah.
You didn't say
it. Yeah. I know.
Actually, I don't know if I marked up because I'd seen this, but I can't remember, and I meant to look it up. Probably be blocked from work. He was on The Aristocrats.
Everyone is on.
I know, but I just forgot he was on it. So I was looking at the night. It's like, how did he tell that joke? Because I can only imagine it's manic.
The problem with The Aristocrats is I've seen it only the once. And
I've
had
seen
it in stitches.
Same,
but I imagine it would only have a one watch value.
I don't know. I think I imagine the second time around, if you're drunk, maybe I think you could have.
If you're going to include caveats
so
like that,
it's filthy and weird. It's just it's
well, that's exactly the point.
I know, but that's not so great about it.
It's like what movie 43 tried to be, but actually
Lord.
Good.
Oh,
sadly, I'll never know because I never watch it. But,
no, neither.
Good policy, that.
Night of the Museum was only on last night on TV.
And we still have one more to come.
Yeah. Apparently the Simpsons episode was being broadcast. Oh, not the Simpsons. The Family Guy episode was where Peter gets the Midas touch where he turns everybody into Robin Williams. And then
that is so strange.
Tries to commit suicide to make it stop. Yeah. Apparently that was on last night as his death was being announced. And
no.
Tragic coincidence, really. I mean, you couldn't have
that's like the Mandela premiere the day that Nelson Mandela
absolutely.
Died. That's just
spooky.
Yeah,
I was suspected he killed him, though, that just to get into a realistic movie. But I'm not blaming Idris Elba.
That's a very, very, very boring film.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. One thing I would have to mention is his cameo in Louis a couple of years ago.
That's great. At the
amazing.
That's brilliant. And it's at the funeral, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Louis and Robin Williams have a mutual friend who has died, and they both turn up at the graveside and end up going for coffee together. And they're both very sort of
brilliant.
Dancing around the topic of how they knew him and whether they liked him. And eventually Louis says... he was a terrible arsehole, and they both start laughing and bond over the fact that this guy was just horrible. But then they go to a strip club that this guy really liked, and they tell the strippers that he's died, and they're devastated, which just gives an insight into this fictional character who's died. But there's this really lovely moment when they say goodbye to each other, and Robin Williams asks Louis C.K., if he'll go to his funeral, and Louis C.K. says, yes, will you come to mine, you know, whoever dies first. So... It's really tragically poignant, but it's beautiful.
Isn't it? Like all of Louis, particularly the last season, which is just hot sensation. Watch Louis if you haven't seen it.
Only Louis could get away with having a scene like that in it, and it really is. It's a wonderful episode.
Is there a question to be asked? I presume there's more films to come.
There are.
Anything? Are we thinking, is there anything good, or is it kind of RV level?
There's Night at the Museum 3.
Nobody wanted.
No.
Ben Stiller wanted it.
That's one person.
Ben Stiller is more powerful than a lot of people put together.
That's not good.
Come on, take it down a notch. I saw a clip from The Angriest Man in Brooklyn today, which sort of looks interesting.
Initial reviews haven't been great, but who knows?
But what did you say earlier on? Robin Williams is never anything less than watchable.
That's
so
true. That is
there
true.
There you go.
Is that Phil Alden Robinson? God, he's fallen a long way since Sum of All Fears, which wasn't a very high starting point to begin with.
No.
I digress. I quite like that.
That's okay.
Sum of All Fears really should have done an awful lot better than it did.
Considering the dreadful Jack Ryan from last year.
Oh, God.
Absolutely.
Shadow improved.
God, that was horrendous.
Yeah. It wasn't a Jack Ryan film. In much the same way that Man of Steel is not a Superman film. And if you watch
We're not getting back into some shoehorned Superman conversations in here. You've been warned about this before. And even you say in much the same way, we know where we're going.
Another thing I'd really like to mention is all of the amazing speeches and interviews and things that Robin Williams did. I watched his Golden Globe and Oscar acceptance speeches today, and really you should go back and watch them because he's completely flabbergasted, yet still manages to be screamingly hilarious. And again, there's another clip that's brilliant. He was on The Big Breakfast years ago with Zig and Zag. It was put up on the Journal, and it's just... chaos.
I meant to watch that earlier. I will watch it later.
Such watchable chaos, though. It's really so enjoyable.
He's a lot of my heroes in one.
Yeah, me too.
I'm watching some of those earlier. I was watching some of his appearance on Inside the Actor's Studio. That was a recording after which one woman had to be hospitalised for a hernia for all the Wow. Yeah.
That's how you know you've made, haven't you, when you've put somebody in hospital?
Yeah, from laughing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what people can do it.
Another great one is the stand-up sketch from very early on in his career where a woman gets up to go to the bathroom and he's screaming at her to come back and sending her friends out to make sure she's okay.
Oh,
and then he's like, give me your coat.
Allison, we know you're in there.
That one, yeah. Where he's taking her coat and she comes back from the bathroom. The whole audience is looking at her and Robin Williams has her coat on. And she's just going, what happened?
That's his gig in San Francisco in 82. It's wonderful.
Absolutely brilliant.
And it's a little rude at times, as is all his stand-up, but it's also got such warmth to it and such personality and energy. It's typical of all his stand-up. Actually, I find it ironic that as his career went on, his films were a bit more, I hesitate to use the word sappy.
Schmaltzy.
Tamer. Tamer, certainly tamer.
Tamer.
Yeah, his films got tamer, his stand-up got raunchier.
Yeah, that's true.
He got older as well.
He like, did, maybe and he more bitter and in the stand-up, at least.
Yeah, but at least maybe that was his outlet in the sense that he had a family, so he thought maybe films, kind of softer edge, was the way to go.
Mm. I really feel, though, that, you know, all of us grew up with Robin Williams. I mean, Niall and you guys have said that you grew up watching Mork and Mindy, which I did as well.
Yeah.
But there's a certain feeling that while we grew up watching that stuff, Robin Williams sort of stayed the same, and he kept this sort of childlike wonder and innocence around him, certainly in his performing life. Obviously, we know he had demons and everything else, which is just makes the innocence a little bit more tragic, but we all grew up, and he just kept this wonder at the world.
Really, he seemed ageless in that sense.
Absolutely.
As well.
He's like a non-creepy Pee Wee Herman.
maybe you should put that on his tombstone. Realize Robin Williams, he was a non-creepy Pee Wee Herman. I think he might have appreciated that.
Even Pee Wee Herman appreciated that. Yeah, that's true.
I think he was a little bit more like Peter Pan. He never really wanted to grow up in the non-Michael Jackson sort of way. He never really wanted to grow up, and he never really did. Certainly not in the public eye.
No.
I don't know if anybody thinks... I used to think of this today, and I don't know if this is specific to me, but I was thinking... It was a couple of years ago since Tony Scott died.
Yeah.
And there's something shocking about a suicide for somebody that's older. It's almost as if, like... You'll have sorted your shit out by the time you're old. Not that exclusive age, I like to do it really. But
it's a presumption.
There's a feeling that there's a younger, you know, that it's burnout and fade away, all that kind
Certainly
of stuff.
Certainly for men, because suicide age for men is a lot younger, according to statistics.
Yeah. Because I remember the Tony Scott, I remember reading about that, about the kind of sort of bridge, and it was hard. Like,
horrible.
And then there's something really shocking. I think Hunter S. Thompson did as well, although he kind of.
Yeah, but you'd sort of expect that from Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, maybe so.
Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of him, but you would expect that.
And in a way, Philip Seymour Hoffman, too. I mean, it's an accidental overdose, but it's.
That still hurts too much.
It's a lonely way to go.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman death. Really, 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 truly upset me. I was actually standing in my bedroom going, please God, no, not Philip Seymour Hoffman. But this actually upset me even more because I grew up so much with Robin Williams. It actually does feel like somebody from my childhood has died, even though, sadly, I never got to see the great man in person or meet him or interview him or anything.
Isn't this year just sucking so far? They've taken... those two are gone.
Yeah.
No one else, please.
Yeah.
What could it have been Robbie Williams? God's sake.
Oh, I'd have been upset about that.
I had that talk today. No. I had exactly that talk.
I would have been upset about that.
I could have lived with that. As a swap deal. If it was offered to me now as a swap deal, you better believe I'm taking it. Sorry, Robbie.
Watch your back, Robbie.
He could sing angels in heaven. Everybody be happy.
It's few
makes sense, because that were because I'm sure many people have thought, yeah, over my dead body.
Ba-dum-tsh.
I like that one, that quote that they have of Robin Williams and talking about what he would do when he gets to heaven. And he's like, I hope that God's there. And he goes, yeah, you have front row seats to the concert. Elvis and Mozart are playing. And then he's like, and God says, I hope there's laughter too. Like God starts and goes, two Jewish rabbis walk into a bar.
if there's laughter in heaven, there's a bit less here on earth today.
Yeah,
that is true.
Oh, let's talk happy talk, shall we?
Happy talk.
Happy talk.
How can we do for happy talk?
Happy feet.
Which he was in.
Which he was in. Oh, happy feet too.
Yeah. And happy feet too.
Yeah.
Well, traditionally, we move on to the box office top 10.
Which generally isn't happy talk.
No. there's a couple of comedies in it, so, you know, it's not so bad.
Well, comedy's relative, but let's go.
Ooh, fairly nasty. Right, so at 10 is the children's... animated film House of Magic. So this is still holding on in there.
Why?
80% of every box office this year has been animated. I'm exhausted with animated films. It doesn't matter what they are, they just struggle with stuff.
Well, we have, so the House of Magic, it's a story about a cat who is trying to guard the house of the magician who takes him in. It's a
film.
It is, and it's animated.
This crisis with tea,
and kids will probably like it if they're young enough and haven't seen anything better.
Ooh.
Ouch!
Yeah.
So if you live in the boondocks and you want to bring your kids to see something, The House of Magic.
And at 9, Step Up 5, the fifth movie of the Dancing franchise.
They're all in.
Step Up. No. Just no, I won't.
I refuse.
But as Jay said, they're all in.
Yeah. They're all in. I mean, this is it.
They're all in except Channing Tatum.
Yeah, that's true.
it was too busy looking at it from his rearview mirror.
He's shopping for trophy cases as we speak.
Yes, he is. Good on him.
It's absolutely amazing. I was watching the E! True Hollywood Story of Amanda Bynes last night.
Don't
you have a life?
Oh my god, no, I totally
Why? I have seen this man's DVD and Blu-ray collection. You have so much better stuff than
Sorry, Bynes, I came home to find my wife watching the E! True Hollywood Story of Amanda Bynes. So anyway, but they were talking about She's the Man.
Oh my god, I love
Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum stars as well. So he's gone from that and step up to
possible Oscar nomination.
That would have killed many a career, that kind of trajectory.
Well, it hasn't helped hers any bit.
No.
At 8, The Purge Anarchy.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
That's slipping quick.
Yeah, well, that's because it's again, not living up to the premise in any way, shape, or form. This one has decided to go class. You know, forget the whole nonsense of what happens when crime is legal for one night. Let's focus on how the system is designed to enforce the 1% belief, and it gets really political.
I don't watch these movies, but so I haven't seen The Purge Anarchy. But what makes me laugh is surely the premise of The Purge is that there is anarchy on the streets.
Yeah, because it's a purge.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So why did you use the most really obvious word, I can't think of them.
Cliche.
Yes, thank you. For the second film, The Purge, which it's implied, it's anarchy. Anarchy, just in case you didn't get it.
Let's hammer home that point.
Also, it starts with a guy driving home who breaks down with like hours to spare on the evening of The Purge. I would be locked in for the week. There is no way. Right.
But that was the underlying problem of the first one as well. That the Purge. Anarchy, the people destroyed the third act. But that film is just dreadful. But the whole thing of that casual kind of thing, it's like, I don't believe I'd be walking around my house 20 minutes before the Purge starts going, we should lock down the windows and make sure everything is working, because
I wouldn't be in America. If it's all of America,
fly straight out of there.
No, I'd be gone. Yeah. I don't care.
It's insanity. The whole premise just doesn't work anyway.
I think the filmmakers are assuming their audience wouldn't give it that much thought.
Which they're probably right, but that's fine. Much 240,000.
Yeah, no, it's done respectable business for it's Blumhouse that are doing it. So he's bankrolling loads of films, like Sinister 2 coming out with Kieran Foy directing.
Yeah.
Hope
is better than Sinister 1.
I like Sinister.
Yes, I know.
We have to keep discussing this.
Yes, we will.
I still believe that would be better if it was about Mr. Sinister from the X-Men. So.
Always with the comic books. Always with the comic books. Next.
I'm not even saying anything.
At 7, and 7 weeks in the chart now, is How to Train Dragon 2, which I absolutely adore.
Me too.
And I have seen.
Neither have I.
Oh, guys,
I love the first night.
The first one.
It's not quite on the level of the first one, but it's still really, really enjoyable and really cute. It's all the background stuff of Toothless playing and stuff. That's the stuff that makes you laugh.
You remember the best things about the first one?
No.
What's the best thing about the first one?
The score.
Yes. They ruined it.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm out! Yeah. No! No!
Because they started adding in poppy crap into it.
Mm. It's still John Powell doing it,
It is
right?
Still John Powell doing it, but then,
John, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, but they add lyrics, and the lyrics...
Lyrics?
Yeah. Yes.
What? What is this foul nonsense? Yeah.
Who are we channeling now? I'm not quite catching it. I'm afraid.
Me! This is me! This is Angry Philip, back again from last week.
Excellent.
And number 6 now.
Right, moving on. Number 6, if you're going to keep your anger, Mrs. Brown's Boy is the movie.
Ah, Christ. This just makes me think I'm in some kind of fever dream.
Down 43%.
3.7 million.
Okay.
That's amazing.
This isn't a fever dream. This isn't a fever dream. This is me in a coma.
No, look, it appeals to a very certain demographic, and they love it.
My mother is the very certain demographic.
I wouldn't like to name
names. I have pointed out to other people, though. I have seen 2 or 3 kind of 15, 16-year-old guys on the Lewis talking about it. I haven't seen it and looking forward to seeing it again.
Okay, maybe...
It's a weird...
Maybe demographic was the wrong word, but it applies.
It's not one of the traditional four-quarter films. It very much gets its base in that one older quarter.
Yeah, but then there's
also the country,
Yeah.
Which likes it as well, and yeah, which makes me sound awful because I'm from the country, but still.
Wow, you're just reinforcing broad stereotypes, but it doesn't matter because that's exactly what Mrs. Brown's voice the movie does anyway.
Exactly.
The movie. So, you pronounced it wrong.
Yep.
I'm emerging from the coma.
Mrs. Brown's voice.
Klaus von Bülow standing over me right now.
Coming soon to a theater near you. Mrs. Brown's voice, the sequel.
I never checked, and I meant to check. How is it done in the UK? What's the total up there? Because it was a black.
Yeah,
it was 12
done,
million. Or
it's
something,
done well, it? But it not
not quite
it,
as well.
It was tracking better to before it came out.
Before people saw it.
they honestly thought that they were going to get 20 odd million.
They thought it'd beat Michael Collins at the box office.
Here,
it did here.
No, it hasn't. Not yet.
No. Well, it had a bigger opening weekend.
Had a bigger
it
opening
did,
weekend.
But overall,
yeah, it won't drop. Mike Collins made 4.8 million pounds. So.
Just for inflation and change of currency.
Exactly. So it's not going to reach it. So,
well, thank heaven for small mercies.
Mm. Yeah, but this anyway, and it's nowhere near Avatar and Titanic, which made 7 million. So the pair of them. Yeah.
Don't even get me started.
Seriously.
I'm not even going there.
His new movie.
Titanic's okay.
His new movie.
Dude! It's okay!
It's not!
The first half sucks. The second half is some.
The only bit that's good about it is Billy Zane being all camp and chewing his way through all of the
scenes.
Leonardo DiCaprio dying is hilarious.
14-year-old me would like to mention the painting scene.
Yeah, Kate Winslet, of course.
How many people forget the sinking? That is riveting as hell. It's really exciting.
It's not as if you don't know what happened.
I'm not talking about the people.
Oh, no, there are people who didn't know.
Spoiler alert, the ship sinks.
No, there are people who didn't know. It was
a
real
thing. There are people who genuinely didn't know.
On the technical level, that the second is absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
But it's a pile of steaming.
All the script is absolute nonsense.
His new film... which is about the depths of the sea. So he goes down into Mariana Trench. Yeah, so it's another one.
The person who has been lowest in our oceans is not like some marine biologist.
Or Jack Cousteau.
Yeah.
It is James Cameron.
James Cameron is
very depressing.
It isn't it?
Well, maybe he's just trying to set the bar for his next film. You know?
Yeah, right down there.
He's never risen beyond down there.
What I was going to say about Secrets of the Deep or whatever new one is called is that it opened in the US last week and it opened very, very badly.
Good.
Yeah,
balance to the universe.
I don't know what it is about his documentaries. They never seem to get as much attention. He did one about Titanic. He did one about some sea life.
The problem with this one is that they talk about it being an exploration of the deep and all the rest, right? The first hour is assembling the team.
Lord.
And then it's
the first. How long is this?
It's like 90
James
minutes
Cameron.
Long.
It sounds like the same plot cards as his movies.
Yeah. So it's and it's basically a character study of James Cameron.
Lord.
So
the man's ego knows no better. You couldn't pay me not to see another James Cameron.
Now, I heard a very interesting thing the other day. It was on another podcast, and it's if it had been directed by Werner Herzog.
Twice I watch it in 3D.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'll be about your encounter with the school. Yes, I am Groot.
Did you just say I am Groot in Werner Herzog's voice?
I am Gloop. 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 From The Simpsons when he pretends to be Augustus Gloop. At five.
Oh, are we there already?
We are at five.
Thankfully.
We have another animated film, The Nutjob.
Lord, it's just
dreadful.
It's just not good. Even Will Arnett can't save it.
Yeah, and his Batman is brilliant.
Batman is outstanding.
Yeah,
yes.
I think I watched the Lego Movie 3 times last weekend.
Yeah, well, it's a much better thing to do than watch this.
It's a brilliant film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone who's thinking of bringing the kids to see The Nutjob, save your €20 and buy the Lego Movie on DVD instead.
Yeah, seriously do.
Yeah. At four, speaking of saving €20 and buying the DVD instead, Planes 2, Fire and Rescue.
Yeah. So, in at number four with...
Less than €100,000.
Wow.
Really?
Jesus. Yeah. For Disney, that ain't good.
Yeah. They do use an AC/DC song really well in the film, but other than that, meh.
That's not
the
good.
Is
there such a thing as a good use of AC/DC? Besides maybe using a CD for a poster.
Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen them live. They're amazing.
I've seen them live and they were
thanks, but I prefer the use of Eiffel 65 myself.
In Iron Man 3?
Yeah.
There's no AC/DC in Iron Man 3.
Yes, that's why I like it. Damn you, Favreau. Thank you, Shane Black. Moving on.
Yeah, so it's the sequel, which is part of a trilogy, and nobody wanted that. Anyway, so at three, and we're into the good films. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
You said we were into the good films.
I like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Apes is good.
It's not.
It is.
No. I still haven't seen.
Off a couple of
I will.
Judging from the conversation we've had so far today, I think you'll probably hate it as well, because we seem to agree on it.
I didn't mind the first one, but...
I'm not saying it doesn't.
And the lack of James Franco in the second one makes me feel a little better.
But we've also lost John Lithgow.
That is a disappointment.
Yeah.
But we've gained Gary Oldman. Yes.
For Herdy's Hocus.
Yeah. Well, Gary Oldman.
He's not bad.
To take a bite out of the scenery.
He's about as good as the humans get in this movie. It's all about the apes here. That's the most thing, and they are stunning.
But is that enough for a film, though? I mean, if you have humans in the film, and I presume the lead in is to whatever characters the assemble or whatever, surely they should be a little better than, it's all about the apes.
All right, in the first one, the humans got relatively little development. Here, it's not much better.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't matter because the most compelling characters are and always were going to be the apes.
Yeah, because, the names of the movie would tell you that.
And this one is not just about Caesar. You have a power struggle going on between him and Koba, played by Toby Kebbell.
I'd just like to say for the record that I disagree with all of this. I'm not going to get in and start an argument, but for my own posterity, I disagree.
Make a change.
No!
Please jump in and have an argument. That's what it's all about.
I'm a guest. I have to be nice.
No, you really don't.
You just have to be honest.
Move it on before I start.
You just have to be right.
Yeah. I'm always right.
There we go. See, then you're fine. Okay, Stalin planned the episode. Sucks ass. Brogan has spoken.
No, you're wrong.
Philip is a contrarian, so he's just going to disagree with anything.
We will set the record straight on this next week.
Because I will have seen it.
William.
You promise.
I swear I will see stuff.
Well, if you don't like it and you want someone to come and back you up, just give me a shout.
Right.
Now it's going to be the two of us against him. Guardians of the Galaxy, that too.
So
one of the best films of the year.
Oh, shot!
Amazing.
No way.
Dude, I let you talk. Don't start.
Guardians. You let a woman in on this thing, and look what's happened. It's anarchy.
The misogyny busters just pulled her back.
I'm kidding. Come on.
let's move on.
Guardians of the Galaxy is. It's so much fun.
It's absolutely just one of the most
funny. It's another rogue Marvel film.
Right. I haven't seen this either. I almost went to see it the weekend, right? There was timing issues. Right.
Yeah. It was on the cinema.
It was on the cinema. I was going to go see it. Checked the last minute. It was the 3D. And I'm not going to see films in 3D anymore. So 2D was on too late. I didn't get to see it. That's where we're at.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Two things, right? I want to say this. Right. Philip's review, whether you agree with or disagree with, is well argued on this side, right?
Yes.
It's backed up in how he sees it, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing I'd say, and this is what worries me, and as I said, I haven't seen it yet, and people keep saying the word fun, right? And nothing else to say. Like, is fun enough? Like, are we saying it's fun? And it's great, or are we saying it's fun? But let's just ignore all that stuff that's a bit crap over here. What are we saying exactly then?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because I'm saying it is flawed, but it is so much fun.
Yeah, I had issues with it as well the first time I saw it. There's so much story going on that often at times you're going, who is that, and who is that, and why is Glenn Close there, and where's Nathan Fillion, and... There's Benicio del Toro, and I don't know what he's doing.
Except
I know where Nathan Fillion is now.
No, what I'm saying, except for Benicio del Toro, is doing a massive exposition dump.
Right.
Mm. He is.
No,
for the film, for the franchise.
Yeah, right?
Can I just say that?
If this wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy, wouldn't people be kicking the crap over for all of that? Because I've seen films that maybe haven't done all of that things and still being, hang on a sec, that's a logo.
Yeah, but it's really well acted. It's really funny. It's sad at times. The pacing is really good. And just Chris Pratt is just a joy to watch on screen. He's really, really just nailed the character of Peter Quill.
I do like Chris Pratt.
And Vin Diesel
is
the cutest character you will see on screen this year. And that is saying something. To be able to watch a film with Vin Diesel playing a tree and go, oh my God, I need to own a dancing version of you. That's quite a thing.
Philip?
I'm not buying it. I still say... I still say it's overplotted. I still say the characters are near as interesting as you think. And it is. There are moments where it is just one huge exposition dump. The emotionality is forced, especially that opening scene.
Oh, and of course it suffers from Marvelitis in that the third act is one massive set piece that just solves everything.
The
but
same
even saying
set piece that we've seen two or three times already.
Even saying that, I still gave it 5 stars. I still had a great time.
How can you give something 5 stars after saying all you've just said? That makes no sense
because
logically.
It is greater than the sum of its parts.
But that's 4 stars, surely.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
And are we going to have our first disagreement? This is going to be our first fight over the second table.
I'll be seeing
this
weekend.
Niall
will back me up.
The comic book nerd of the group will back you up. Who the fuck?
What would you? I was going to be a four.
Yeah.
And I am stood firmly planted in the 2.5 category.
2.5 is not bad. People still think 2.5.
This is why he got called a troll.
2.5 is 50%. You pass the legal theory for 2.5.
No,
he's not a troll. No. He's just got a different opinion.
Yeah. I'm contrarian. That's what I am.
No, you said that, don't me.
Well, I know. Wait,
I say it every week.
He does say it. He's actually listed on the site under contrarian. If you get out of the site map.
He calls himself Mr. Cynical, for Christ's sake. I mean,
yeah,
Jesus.
Sure. Someone has to.
You don't. It's like Fat Amy. You just
name yourself before anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. And I believe me, there is some good stuff. I mean, those soundtrack choices at times, they're just
amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That
Moon Age Daydream while they're flying through the nowhere. Oh, amazing.
There's some good stuff. There's some great special effects, like the shots of the Nebula and the planets. They're mm-hmm. stunning stuff. And yeah, Chris Pratt is charming as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. I just think there's a lot of problems.
You're
that can
entitled to your opinion, and this is why it's called your opinion.
Yeah. And that's why 5 stars is called your opinion.
And sometimes you need to get your opinion to yourself. Just,
of course, it's my opinion.
But your 5 stars sounds like 4 stars broken. I cannot help but think that. I'm sorry. You sound like
there are evil
you and Niall seem to agree. He says it's 4 stars, and it kind of sounds maybe 3.5 to me. But when you say it sounds like 4 to me. And I don't know.
I can't shake the feeling that when I came out of the cinema, I was just like, oh, I haven't had so much fun at a movie.
Do you think it'll stand
so
up
long.
To repeated watchings
I've seen
a decade
it twice.
From now?
I've seen
I know
it twice.
He's seen it 3 times. He's insane.
Yeah. No, I've seen it twice. And, you know, you do actually need to see it twice because there's so much story going on. Because the first time I was going, I have really no idea what was going on, but
I loved it. I liked it more the second time.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right, we'll see. I'm not playing. I'm not seeing.
So
twice,
we send Philip back.
Even I don't care how good it is, obviously.
A couple more viewings.
I beg your pardon. Dream on.
It has to be Lego movie levels good for me to watch it twice in succession.
It's for me.
It's up there with Lego movies.
We'll see.
And at one, which, and again, talking about film that's fun but good. Sweet Jesus, is it flawed? In between.
Ah, straight in.
The sequel nobody wanted.
Did we expect this? Straight in, number one.
Yes.
10,000 euros per screen.
The last one was the highest grossing is the highest grossing UK comedy of all time.
Wow. There you go.
And this is set to beat it.
Impressive figures, boys.
And it because it made a decent amount of money in Australia as well, hence you set the second one down there, I would presume. Which is canny eye on the other markets also. So
yeah, well, you say a canny eye. I think you're giving the film a bit too much credit.
No, it's nothing to do with the film. That's just marketing. That's like that's like setting something in China to sell
Transformers.
Exactly. I mean, it's no more artistic idea.
You use that term loosely. Anyway,
so I was laughing for most of this.
Here.
Which is
don't look at me. I haven't seen it.
Have you not seen it?
No.
If you're a fan of the show, you know what you're going to get. You're set.
I was a fan of the show, but I mean, the show was years ago. It had, like, the show, it's the same joke. It's like, the same joke over and over, and it doesn't really change.
Mm.
But, when it came on originally, I watched it, laughed, whatever. Anytime I see any repeats of it, it doesn't really stand up at all.
I agree, it's
very forced feeling, but, you know.
I think you get a lot of the same of that, although the plot involves them going to Australia. And you just wonder, this is the kind of awkwardness you probably get up to at home. Why did you have to go so far? And you...
Money.
And as you say, it's the money, yeah.
Mistake this for...
No, but it's the trope of all TV, made for TV.
Send them somewhere.
Yeah,
it's like why the Hardy Books had to go to Poznan.
Yeah, but
there's no need for it.
But they've done it twice now.
I thought you were going to say the Hardy Boys. Yeah. They went to Poznan. I never read that one.
They were the first smugglers.
I hope they brought Nancy too.
Right, so we're going to move on to the new reviews for this week. First out of the blocks, we're going to go with The Expendables 3, which is out on Thursday.
Okay. Who's seen this?
Me and Brogan. We saw it last night.
And?
Brogan gave it a quite lovely one-star rant earlier.
One star, really?
Oh, sit down.
I haven't seen any of this franchise, so compare it even to the first two. I mean, how are we talking?
I've seen the first two, and I can't remember them.
I've seen the first two also.
The first one is fun, the second one is less fun, and the third one is even more less fun.
I described the second one as a series of scenes set entirely within Call of Duty maps. Because that's how I see it. Because there's just these fun roads that kind of block deliberately for whatever, you can only get out this way kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like the start of A Touch of Cloth, closed for opening sequence.
So I like the first one. I thought it had fun.
The first one
was
that.
Great.
Yeah, the first one had that tongue-in-cheekness that this
he just
one
got a pitch just right.
Hold on, did you just use the phrase Lundgren is great?
Dolph Lundgren is great in the first.
It's a long time since that's been said.
He was great in the first one. I thought he actually had presence, and it's like then it all went
the away. Best character in the original Expendables crew is Terry Crews, right?
Sideline
him immediately in this film, and he's gone for the rest of the thing, or the rest of the duration, and turns up back again at the end. But Mel Gibson,
Antonio Banderas
are fantastic. Antonio Banderas is hilarious.
Is this Mel Gibson's comeback?
I really hope not.
It could be. He's actually he is the one that seems to be the most aware of the type of film that he's trying to make.
Well, he spent most of his career making them. Yeah. So
he does have a line in the film where he says, if you keep talking, I'm going to open up your meat shirt and show your heart. You're like, wow, really?
Meat shirt?
Your meat shirt.
Yeah.
Meat shirt. Who says that?
Mel Gibson.
Yeah. I didn't really like Mel Gibson.
I saw him tearing open a lot of meat shirts with Apocalypto. But other than that, yeah, that just doesn't sound right.
That was a weird line.
But he sells the line, you know? You half believe him.
Did Sly write that, I presume?
Yes.
The
two biggest problems that the film suffers from is Sly Stallone's script and dialogue, and
Sly
Stallone himself, because he seems to be acting the shit out of it. He's going for an Oscar.
He thinks he's in Schindler's List, where the rest of them know that they're in a...
Let me guess, he's all mumbles and can't understand a word.
Oh, not a word, but like the rest of the cast know that they're filming on a back lot of a Bond movie set that was disused since the 1960s, whereas Stallone still thinks he's in, you know, the biggest and most important emotional film since Schindler's List.
You see, the problem is, once upon a time, Sly Stallone could act and write. I mean, look at the first two Rocky pictures. Mm. But, that's...
Multiple contusions have led to two problems there.
Well, you know, when you end up making crap like Daylight and Detox, there's only so far you can go.
And Driven.
I forgot about that.
Me and mine, Daylight, actually, as I suppose.
It's disposable shock.
It is.
By and large, if it begins with D and Sly Stallone's in it, don't watch it.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up his CV later.
How is the rating in terms of...
PG-13.
There is literally zero. Oh, no, there's a bit of blood on Mel Gibson's lip.
Yeah.
No!
But not Mel's lip.
Did you throw in the one obligatory F word?
I didn't notice. At least 5,000 people die in this film, but not all of them bloodless.
But the thing that made me laugh was, you know, they kill half of Somalia in the opening sequence, yet Terry Crews gets shot and they're all like, oh, big emotional scene, the strings playing in the background.
That's what we call Black Hawk Down Syndrome.
That's Black Hawk Down Syndrome. Name those 9 soldiers while they mow down town after town.
Name them, they put their bloody names on the helmets.
And it's on the credits at the end.
It's just like Michael Caine.
Or Dawn Survivors.
It's like Michael Caine in Austin Powers. Do you know how many faceless henchmen I've killed in my time? Just lie down, son.
A lot.
That's exactly what it's like.
Judo chop.
It is... it's like they were trying to get revenge for Captain Phillips. You know, it's just
who's the captain now?
Like, that's really, really. There's tons and tons of throwaway one-liners that are just horrible and
heavy, lumpy.
Yeah, Ford seems to be playing a parody of a parody of a parody of himself.
I think he was drunk.
I think probably.
How else do you think he signed on for this?
Antonio Banderas is just He's just like this breath of fresh air that blows through the whole film.
So when
he's
was
just...
Antonio Banderas an action star?
Zorro.
Desperado. Yeah, Desperado.
Yeah, but
Puss in Boots, he's an action star.
Okay, Puss in Boots, it's all like...
Actually, okay. This is the closest he's come to actually acting as Puss in Boots.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So will it make money?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're a fan of the other two, you'll
so does,
you'll
does this mean this. We're not going to get another Almodovar Banderas crossover?
No,
damn
well,
it.
I don't know. We're likely to get, as Brogan puts it,
skin Sylvester Stallone.
Expendable. We're getting expensive.
Well stretched by now.
Because they introduce a whole plot, a whole load of young lads into it. And so, yeah, so we're getting Expendables the junior years. Or what was that one?
Expendable Babies, yeah. Like the Muppet Babies.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Muppet
Only more
Babies. I love the Muppet Babies too, but, you know, I
really
don't mean Expendable
the
Babies.
Memory, what about the Expend the Bells?
Well, there's
is
a woman in this
that
one.
An offshoot of them.
Yeah.
There is to talk about, but they did put a woman into
talking
this one.
Talking of a misogynist.
Did you kill her early?
No.
No.
The sexism.
Did she get raped?
No.
No. Really? No.
I'm amazed by that.
No.
She did get hung up wild and by her arms and leered at by a guy.
Yeah,
who,
but so did Kellan Lutz.
Yeah, that's right. And he doesn't really get leered.
Kellan Lutz is in this?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, didn't he read the script? He was in Legend of Hercules. His career is supposed to be over.
He didn't get the memo.
No, he was too busy tanning.
Get it after this way.
But yeah, they cast Ronda Rousey from the UFC, you know, so
the obligatory UFC man.
Yeah, so it's she can kick ass, you know. She's
she's a great fight sequence.
Yeah, she has some really, really good.
Any dialogue to speak of for anybody?
Did you not hear what we just said about the dialogue, that it was clunky and filled with exposition?
Usually, it was her warding off the advances of some gobshite.
And there's two get to the chopper jokes. Two
of them.
Two.
Yeah.
And there's a Wesley Snipes "I was in jail for tax evasion" joke.
Yeah. I kind of respect that. Because you haven't heard that one in a while.
He'd have to, wouldn't he?
Yeah, you would. Yeah.
But a lot of the actors in the film spend a lot of the time with their eyes narrowed. Wesley Snipes, in credit to him, spends a lot of the time in the film with his eyes wide. He's going different.
He's probably just looking around.
I'm not quite believing he's there.
I'm back on the film set. There are no bars in the windows. Oh my God!
Aww, this is amazing. Somebody get me John Singleton.
John Singleton. Hell, anybody. Get Stephen Norrington. Just get it. Thank you. Somebody will have to Stephen Norrington reference. Thank you.
Well,
Blade was a long time ago.
I'm not, I don't know. I'd probably see this.
It's
but,
just
not the cinema.
Clunky and messy and shot on, like I say, on the rejected set of a 60s Bond film.
It borrows four scenes from Steel takes four scenes from Mission Impossible 3.
It does, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have Philip Seymour Hoffman in it.
Yeah.
Wow. So basically what you're saying is not a hint of originality in his body. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
Gee,
true story.
Didn't see that one.
I'm presuming there's a hardened edition coming for DVD, Blu-ray, whatever.
I don't know.
Well, the thing about it is...
Could have Chuck Norris or whatever.
Chuck Norris is not in it.
No, he's not.
I thought that was the only reason they would cut down.
Bruce Willis is gone as well. Apparently they're the only two people who are expendable.
Yeah. All the irony.
The only saving grace for this franchise may be that this film was leaked online in HD quality a few weeks ago, so maybe the people who were going to go and see it downloaded it, thought it was rubbish, and are not going to go and see it in the cinema, and maybe the franchise will die.
Did you see the
guy? I even hope.
Check back next week for the top 10.
Did you see the guy from Vulture who downloaded it?
Oh,
listened to download,
saw that.
Wrote the article about how he watched it and how brilliant it was, and that he was going to go see it in the cinema.
There's some, like, it's a terrible idea, right?
Yeah.
As an article. But there is a certain amount of honesty in it. Where you know that happens a lot. I mean, if you ever download anything, you know how the page works. You see a movie pop up, and 2 days later, there's a whole rake of reviews on Letterboxd of whatever said movie is. It happens a lot, and people just don't
bat an eyelid.
Yeah, and you don't talk about it. But it, like, it's an interesting discussion, even. Maybe not that way.
I suppose it's not often you see a leak on
way
the
before,
score
yeah,
and
no,
this far ahead of release.
Wolverine was the X-Men Origin Wolverine was the last time, and that was a work print.
Don't bother.
Yeah. I'm not bothered.
So.
Yeah. But you can presume somebody in the studio got fired for that.
Absolutely.
The thing about X-Men Origin Wolverine's work print was that the effects looked less fake in it
than
the final print.
Extraordinary.
Oh, Jesus.
I'll wait for DVD.
It was the fourth film that they made
with
Wolverine
in it,
and they got the clothes wrong.
You're still on Wolverine.
I'm still upset about X-Men Origins Wolverine.
We all are.
It was the fourth film that had Wolverine in it, and they got the clause wrong. How do you get the clause wrong having already made three films?
I haven't seen it, so how do they get the clause wrong?
They're shiny.
And and unbelievably
that's
thick.
The problem with the film.
And also at times that you can see them coming out from between his fingers.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Yeah.
It's
That's a rookie mistake. It's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. God, it's good.
So basically, in sum, Expendables 3, the film we are talking about.
Yeah, let's bring it all back home.
One Star and All is better than X-Men Origins Wolverine.
No, I'd rather set both of them on fire, to be honest, and watch.
They should put that in the post scene.
And watch YouTube pre-roll ads. That's what I'd rather
watch. You see,
watch.
The problem is now, because they no longer film on film, setting them on fire is much more difficult.
I can make it work.
Not impossible.
No, you just put your Dark Martens on, stamp through the DCP, and then just set it on fire from there.
I like it.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Let's get a James Cameron with that.
Okay, let's go.
Moving quickly on to a film that that myself and Jason have seen. I don't know if anyone else has. The Conquerors.
I'm quite looking forward to it.
Yeah.
You talked about this one before, though.
Yeah. Right, like, it's
one half of a good film.
And the second half of a good idea that's not in a good film.
Yeah.
It's such a brilliant idea, though. Robin Wright plays an actress who has sort of retired, and she's pulled out of retirement to give her image to a studio that they can do mocap and the sort of thing with her and do whatever they want.
Great.
It's a brilliant
idea.
But
the problem, I think, the film is very clunky with even the idea setup. Like, it's a little hammering. In dialogue and exposition, they go around the house of, you know, the reasons, the wherefore, and it's like, we can see it. We can see what's actually happening.
Yeah,
you don't have to tell us all of that. But I think it is a great idea.
It takes 15 minutes to get to that point where where she sells the rights to her image to the...
Yeah.
It's meant to be the study of... Well, I don't know. But if it was the study of who the image belongs to, the people who watch the film or the actor themselves, then that's a very interesting notion, right? Yeah. And that's something that is worthy of being examined. But this...
It fractures out after that, doesn't it? And you don't... It's insanely ambitious. That's the one thing to say about it.
It
tries to grab everything.
It's incredibly beautiful when it goes into the animated sequence as it does.
It's very tiring. Well, I found it.
I was expecting the Blue Meanies to turn up.
It's a very Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, it's just...
But that said, it won Best Animation at the European Film Awards in December last year, so it's
got an audience.
The animation is fine. The only problem I had with the time in the animation was that the story was all over the place.
It
lends itself to some degree with the craziness of the animation, plus the whole idea of exactly what they're getting at in terms of who owns the image. What is the image even when it comes to animation? Because it's like, that's not the real person, obviously, but you can hear Robin Wright's voice and all that kind of stuff. So it plays with that. But you just wanted to find one little through line and kind of knit it all together, and it would have made a brilliant film. And there's a scene, and I think you talked about it a couple of weeks ago, where Harvey Keitel is talking to Robin Wright, where she's been basically digitized, for want of a better word. It's been photographed in this kind of ball, silver ball that has like a million cameras attached to it. It's kind of shooting her all around. And it is a brilliant, and for me, it's the best scene in the film.
Oh, by far.
It's beautiful, and it's really heartfelt and really wonderful. It's like, and I think this is going to take off after here. And that it never hits that height again is the kind of shame, because there's a lot there.
It's definitely a film of two halves.
Yeah. There's clearly a lot to recommend in it, though. Hearing a lot of great things about Robin Wright.
I wouldn't put anybody off watching it. Robin Wright's terrific.
Absolutely. Go and see it and come back to us with an argument, seriously, because it's a film that you really want to discuss.
Yeah. I really want to see it, I can tell you that much. Not least because I have heard some of the score and it sounds absolutely beautiful. God bless you, Max Richter.
It's a fine idea, not quite a fine film, but some great stuff in it.
Yeah.
I've watched worse.
Yeah, I know, and you will.
So
why?
Expendables 3.
Moving on, we have the Dinosaur 13 is opening in Lighthouse.
This sounds interesting. I didn't know anything about this until I looked it up today.
Yeah, so basically the film is a documentary about the discovery of the first full T-Rex.
In
the Badlands of South Dakota.
Yeah, and who owns it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story in that it's called Dinosaur 13 because it's the 13th T-Rex skeleton to be found, but it's the first one that's over 60% complete. It's actually 80% complete.
Wow.
And they name the people who discover it from the Black Hills Institute named the skeleton Sue, because the woman who discovered it is called Susan Hendrickson, so they say, right, we're going to name her after you. And they take her back to the Black Hills Institute, having paid the landowner $5,000 for taking the skeleton out of the land. It takes them 2 weeks to completely excavate the skeleton, they take it back and they start working on preparing it for exhibition, and they're so delighted with their coup because these people have been interested in paleontology since they were knee-high to a grasshopper, so it's fascinating. And suddenly the National Guard comes in and it ends up in a massive, massive court case.
So basically it's the government on their backs all over again. It sounds like Ron Paul's Requiem.
It's the last 5 minutes of Raiders.
Trust you.
It's such a fascinating story because they paid the landowner for the land, but he's a Native American and his land is in trust to the U.S. government. So then the U.S. government are saying, well, no, he had no right to sell it, so it's ours.
Yeah.
And it ends up in court, and it goes on in court for years. The dinosaur is seized and taken into storage, and it goes on for about 7 to 10 years before it's actually resolved.
That's an hour in screen time.
Yeah, but the problem with the film is, while it's a fascinating story when they're talking about Sue, the dinosaur herself, it soon gets really bogged down in legalese because there are all these ancillary court cases going on as well at the time saying, oh, you picked up a bone from land. You didn't realise that you crossed from private into public land, so therefore that's theft.
And it's not interesting.
And over-attention to detail.
Yeah, it's all part of the story, but if you pared down the legalese a little bit and played up the emotional side of it, because these people are so attached to this skeleton that they've worked with for a year before it's seized. There's one man who goes and stands outside the storage unit where it's stored and cries because he's so attached to her. And that's such an interesting story. And this is the guy who ends up going to prison for a different felony. But it gets completely bogged down in legalese and the legal aspects of the court case, and that's where this film starts to suffer.
Mm. Well, it might be interesting to some, but it's funny to hear that it does go down that route.
Yeah, well, look, if you're into dinosaurs and really interesting stories, I mean, it is a fascinating story, and you know, the upshot of it is that Sue is now on display in Chicago, so it does have a resolution at the end, but it takes a long time to get there.
Hmm. Maybe. The cost is maybe for me.
It's going to turn up on Volta. I would definitely say go
sure.
watch it. Or,
yeah, well, it's definitely something that you could watch in the comfort of your own home.
Absolutely. I would have thought so.
It's a Lighthouse exclusive at the moment.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yes.
Next up, Hector in the Search for Happiness.
Yes. I doubt we're going to find any happiness in Hector in the Search for Happiness.
Oh, me.
This.
I haven't seen it, but two words, Simon Pegg.
Oh, I love Simon Pegg.
No. Insufferable.
I'm completely with Philip here. I remember back in the innocent days when he was in Spaced, when I really liked him.
Yeah.
That was back when he was
a long, long time ago. The World's End, I was going after The World's End. The trailer for this, horrible. I mean, I haven't seen it. Have you seen the film?
Yes.
And?
Have you seen it? No.
No?
Okay. So I'm going to talk about this film as well.
Yeah.
it's the story of Hector, who's a psychiatrist, and he's sort of hitting a midlife crisis, and he realizes that all of his patients are sort of unhappy and all on a search for happiness, and maybe he should be searching for happiness as well. So he packs a bag, gets on a plane, leaves his girlfriend behind, and goes off traveling around the world searching for... He's actually doing research to find out what makes people happy. So he's talking to people saying, you know, what makes you happy and what fulfills you in your life, and trying to find something from what they're telling him. But at the same time, he's going on his own sort of personal journey as well.
I think this was released previously under the name Eat, Pray, Love.
I didn't
see. Sounds equally bad.
Yeah, it's sort of along the same lines. I didn't see Eat, Pray, Love, but I read the
book.
No, I read the book.
Don't.
This is what the Hollywood Reporter had to say about it. You ready?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Watching it is like being brutally violated by a greeting card.
Wow!
That is
a
zinger for the 80s.
Sweet.
It's incredibly twee, and it's incredibly stereotypical as well. Like,
I heard
pretty,
it's borderline offensive.
Yeah, pretty Chinese girl that he meets. Oh, guess what? She's a prostitute.
All Chinese girls seem to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. He goes on a wander through Africa, having left his friends on the way to another friend's house. Guess what? Gets kidnapped. It really does play
this
with all...
This sounds
horrid. It really does.
It really plays with all of the stereotypes that you have tried to forget from films from the past. And the problem that I had with it was Hector starts out being a guy who's pretty miserable and really setting out on this trip but doesn't know really what he wants from it. And as soon as he gets on the plane, he's like chatterbox, obnoxious, annoying. And you're going, wait.
Simon Pegg.
A minute ago you were getting on the plane and you weren't like this at all, and now you're just a completely different character. And every single country that he hits, he changes, which is a real problem for the film because the audience never really gets a grasp of this character that we're supposed to be rooting for, because every time, in almost every scene, he changes. So it's quite irritating in that
way. Yeah, I'm going to pass on this one, to be quite frank. I don't think this was
I'll join you on that. No, it wasn't
made for you. I have to say, in all honesty, I do love Simon Pegg. I've
Oh, you're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one. Yeah, I've met him several times and I've always had...
Oh, you really are the one.
I really had great conversations with him and I really do like him. But outside of films with Edgar Wright and Nick Frost, I think he's actually quite weak. You know, Fantastic Fear of Everything was pretty horrible.
It looked horrible. I couldn't bring myself to watch
How to Lose Friends and Alienate People was pretty horrible. And sadly, Hector and the Search for Happiness is going to end up in that territory.
I don't see... That Simon Pegg, even in the Edgar Wright trilogy, though, I think he's pretty weak. Full stop. Like even in those films, I don't get it. I whatever
you don't
it is
get the
that
Pegg
people
effect.
Say, I don't. I like
Space.
I like Shaun of the Dead. I like Space.
Space is amazing.
Shaun of the Dead aged badly, in my opinion. Hot Fuzz was poor in the first place,
three,
and The World End is dreadful.
Of the three, I'm with you on Shaun. I think he's at his most accessible, at least. In film terms, in Shaun.
Yeah, definitely.
And accessibility is exactly what
which for
you
me,
need for a film.
Yeah,
and that's
definitely.
Something that
yeah.
he doesn't have in Hector and the Search for Happiness because he changes in every single scene.
Yeah. The only one for me was Shaun the Dead. I hated Nick Frost. Am I the only one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't crazy about that film, though.
It works better as an homage than as a comedy.
I loved it when I saw it first. And I watched it a couple of years later. I said, that's not bad. Watched it a couple of years later after that, then, but somebody hadn't watched it. And I was kind of embarrassed for my enthusiasm of it because it just doesn't work anymore. Maybe it's me, although I suspect it's not.
No,
I don't think it's you. I think I might be in the minority saying that the Cornetto trilogy is fantastic and Space is brilliant and Simon Pegg has a lot of potential.
I did like Space. I
think Simon Pegg tries to balance his big Hollywood blockbuster films with things that are, on paper at least, have a lot of heart, but it just comes off as schmaltz.
But the thing is, even when he's not playing the lead, I find him annoying. Star Trek. Christ's sake. What's he doing
he's
there?
He's deliberately annoying in Star Trek, though, because he's channeling... You know,
Scotty.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine, right? But please somebody explain to me the absolute... I mean, a ludicrous decision to make his character the way his character is in World's End. He is so obnoxious that he sinks that film away from him.
Because he started off in Shaun as this really relatable guy, as Phil said, and then he turns into...
But that worked.
Yeah, but then he turns into a very straight-laced guy who kicks a lot of ass in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, but that wasn't a character, that was just more a caricature.
Absolutely. So
it wasn't
but that's because it's based on Michael Bay films. No, there are no characters
but
in
then,
Michael
that's
Bay
no
films.
Excuse
that's
for
no excuse.
Film,
but in The World's End, then, they had to make Simon Pegg... You know, they had to show that he's playing a different character, and they're not just doing the same thing all over again.
Oh, you understand
that?
That's
why.
But why that? Why make him so obnoxious? Because it's horrid. Because he leads the film, and I was actually wincing my way through it. I was like, oh, please, somebody stop him.
I don't agree with you on this, so we're going to have to do a look back on The World's End.
Disagree again.
The World's End official opinion is mine, and it's on this website, and it's not quite as contrarian as Jay's.
Why did you like it?
I was disappointed by it, but I didn't hate it.
Okay. I'd be very interested, and I think for everyone in some ways, I think, to give that a 2 or 3 years and rewatch it. Because if something that I found Shaun of the Dead, which was endearing, has an age for me, I can only imagine what something like that, which is not nearly as good as Shaun of the Dead, regardless of whatever you think of it, I'm interested in what people think of it. That's all I'm going to say.
And moving on.
Moving on, we're gone to an IFI exclusive Mobius.
Now, this is from Kim Ki-duk, who is I won't say fascinating, an interesting director. But I say that in spite of the fact that I absolutely despised his last film, Beata.
We said I saw that as well.
We saw that together. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It's a horrible film.
That is a horrible film.
I just finished watching Beata and I was going, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no point.
Oh, look, we're so shocking.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's a Mary, Virgin and Child homage for like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a very, very poor film. Yeah.
So what's the word on Mobius?
It sounds like more of the same. This kind of...
But with a more horror
kind of thing, with the whole the same actress playing the mother and the daughter, not the daughter, it's a girlfriend, so it's like the son fancies the same person, you know.
Dear, Mr. Kim, your needle's stuck in the groove.
Yeah,
stop that.
It sounds...
Oedipus, anybody?
Yeah, it really is. And
well, true Mobius, you know, the very connotation is, you know, that one-sided thing, you know, it's not...
But it's a little exhausting, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't know, I'm out. Yeah. You know, it was that. It was that horrible. Like, yeah, really. Putting yourself
unnecessary graphic violence as well. I have to say, I haven't seen Mobius.
And the worst part is, when it isn't being graphically violent, it's boring.
Yeah.
Really, really boring.
And there's no bigger crime in cinema than boring.
Yeah. You have to at least engage your audience.
Yeah.
So based on previous experience of this director, we are not fans.
No. So we're going to move on to a director that we are fans of the previous work from. It's David Michaud. Yes. And his last film, Animal Kingdom, was fucking brilliant.
Outstanding.
Are you risking our PG-13 rating?
It's the one. It's the one you're allowed.
I said it earlier on in his Robin Williams quote. Leave me out.
Yeah, we like Animal Kingdom.
Yes, we do.
We did. We certainly did.
It gave us Ben Mendelsohn, if nothing else.
Oh God, he's great.
I really loved Animal Kingdom, but in terms of the Australian films, actually, I much prefer Snowtown, even though it's much grimmer.
I'm with you.
Snowtown
was a very interesting experience for me.
I'm looking forward to Macbeth.
I saw Snowtown at the Cannes Film Festival, and by the end of it was a packed cinema, and I stood up at the end of the film to leave. And the cinema was, like, two-thirds empty. People had got up and left. It is graphically violent.
It's remorseless.
It's the tone. Yeah. It's unrelenting.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're getting...
We're talking about David Michaud. Yeah. Who is bringing us The Rover.
Yeah, The Rover.
Jay, you've reviewed this for
us. I have. It's the difficult second album, isn't it? A little bit, I think. It's Guy Pearce, who was born to play roles such as this. He plays Eric, I think it is, who is in the outback in kind of classic 10 years after the collapse, whatever the collapse is. It's left unexplained, probably economic. I mean, there's kind of all nationalities living in the outback and stuff. It's like the whole world is just kind of decamped here.
Not really far away from that in Australia, because there have been artificial... I'm going into geopolitics now, but Australia, the Australian economy has been artificially inflated by money from China. So if...
That sounds really familiar. Where was the Irish economy artificially inflated from?
Yeah. Mm. But it's probably kept them out of the worst of the economic crisis.
It has, for now.
And a mining boom, which is obviously driven by... investment from abroad.
And Irish immigrants.
Tending bar. Hey! But there isn't one in this, curiously. But the basic kind of premise is he's there, he's in this kind of... It's like an Asian bar in the middle of the outback, I suppose, for want of a better phrase. And this car comes flying past with some people in it, including Scoot McNairy.
Scoot!
And the couple of things great. And they crash... You get out of the car, they're kind of coming from a kind of botched robbery. And they take a young guy here to the car.
And he's not best
and he's, pleased. And he's not happy about that. So, pleased. In classic Mad Max tradition, he takes off after them in their car, which he somehow manages to get out of the ground, which is kind of...
Because he's
the hero. Mm-hmm. And he goes after them, and there's this...
Conscript.
There's this wonderful scene, though, just around then, where they stop. And get out.
Yes.
And he stops and gets out. And this classic Western standoff. And you think, oh, this is going to go berserk. And it doesn't. And it's a really quiet, odd scene.
And it's really logic, like both sides really logically
understand
argue.
The kind of thing of it, yeah.
You know, this is why we took your car and why you're being a dick about
it. But you're not getting it.
Yeah, you're not getting it. And he's like, it's my car. Yeah. And it's a really logical,
played out. It's one of the best scenes in the film, I thought, weirdly enough. And basically that happens, they hit him, basically, and they leave him on the road. And he kind of wakes up, kind of figured out they're gone, still got to go after him. But he runs into Scoot's younger brother, Ray, spelled Renee.
Yes.
Played by Mr. Orpatz himself.
Oh.
And he...
they'd left him for dead.
Basically, he tells him, like, you're going to show me where they're gone, and we're going to follow them, and I'm going to get my car back. So the film... becomes plot then, basically. There's a point. It's all freeform a little before that. It's odd little segues into various little strange places.
Yeah.
And it's really good and really interesting. And it's beautiful to look at. And the soundtrack is
beautiful
fantastic.
In its desolation.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's wide vistas. And then the kind of real shocking close-up of Guy Pearce's face, which looks like a mountain. It has a craggy... It's fantastic.
It's great.
A sign of how good of an actor he is, at the very start of the film, he's sitting in his car and a fly goes up his nose and he doesn't even flinch.
Yeah, he's in character.
Absolutely.
And then stuff, and he's great. But the problem with it is, and the film suffers, I think it gets worse as it goes on. It doesn't totally derail it, but the second half of the film becomes plot-driven, which is fine, but it's a little obvious. Robert Pattinson is all tics and...
Robert Pattinson, he's playing this character who seems to have mental disabilities, but then he does, but then he doesn't, and then he does, and
it's
then he doesn't.
Very inconsistent.
And then his accent's American, and then it's
then
not.
Then it's Deep South, and then it's...
Australian, and then it's English, and then it's Irish, and
it's
then
all
it's...
Tics,
it's just, yeah.
Twitches, it's every kind of... I don't really know how to play this, so I'm going to try everything at it kind of thing.
So he's at least trying to act. I see.
But you can see he's very much acting in capital letters.
There. Yeah.
It pulls you out of the movie a little bit.
I have to give him credit, though. I mean, he's coming out of the Twilight franchise, and he's done a film with David Cronenberg, and then he's gone off and done a film with David Michaud. I mean,
done another film with David Cronenberg.
Yeah. There, well, you know, David Cronenberg needs to calm down on the RPATS thing because
Muppets
was awful.
It's terrible. No.
You have to admire him as someone who's come off of the Harry Potter franchise and the Twilight franchise of going, well, actually, I'm just going to try and do something different and prove that, you know, I'm not just a pretty face.
He may only be a pretty face.
He goes halfway to proving that he's not a pretty face, and then he forgets that he's not a pretty face.
But this is the problem. I've only ever seen proof that he's halfway to not being.
He's okay.
I mean, the jury's still out for me.
Yeah, me too.
But the problem with this film is, though, and the problem he's nowhere to hide in it. Pierce is quiet. He's reserved. Everything is in his eyes and his face.
But so everything's going on behind
him. There's two of them together in really quiet scenes. Yeah. 10 scenes. So he has to stand out, or he has to...
fade away.
It's clear how much of a far away from acting Guy Pearce is doing, what he's doing compared to what he's doing. And it's jarring. It's actually quite
jarring. It's jarring because Guy Pearce is inhabiting the character, whereas Robert Pattinson is actor.
And like there's glowing lights. And it's fine once you get to the kind of towards the kind of last act where the kind of more people come into it, so it's less noticeable.
Yeah.
But the last, it's so predictable. And then there's a denouement of very silly and weird kind of thing, which I didn't really think worked.
The reason why Guy Pearce wanted his car back is a little bit silly.
He left his Tesco points and coke tired in the glove compartment, which could get anybody.
And his reusable shopping bag.
The thing about Guy Pearce is that the man is a tremendous actor.
Amazing.
I mean, he's one of the greats.
He's national treasure person. Right. So, I mean, he really is.
And completely underrated as well.
Yeah. Yes. No, he doesn't get enough credit.
So, you know, you're always going to come off second best when you're coming up against someone who is that good.
Why give him that part?
That's probably what drew Pattinson to it in the first place. He saw this card and thought, okay, I have a chance to flex my muscle with some interesting material and against a great actor.
Absolutely.
And if he comes out losing, well, that was always going to be the risk.
But the film comes out losing. Like, let me ask something, right? Had they not cast him and cast somebody who was better, would that make it a better film?
Absolutely.
The important thing would be it should be a better film rather than...
Great script. It's a great story. It's a road movie. It's an economic collapse movie. It's an emotional
It's Mad Max, basically.
But it's not as good, and it suffers towards the end. And
because Robert Pattinson's just got his verbal diarrhea. Like, one time I went to school, and this girl was there, and she did this, and I did that.
Get over it fairly quickly.
I've heard that dialogue before, too. Yeah.
And it's there's a touch of Sling Blade to it, there's a touch of everything. He throws at everything.
Sling Blade?
Yeah.
Question.
There's a bit of pointing of nails, twitching. It's everything. Like, it's never ending.
The question is, Lewis Pattinson, who do you cast? If it was Ben Foster...
Yeah.
He's too old
and too intense. He's just a bit too bug-eyed.
I don't know.
But this character does have mental issues.
I'd probably cast an unknown. I mean, you don't need any. Like,
it's a great opportunity for
him. It is. And beside Pierce, you know, like you don't need. He owns every scene he's in. I mean, you don't need anybody to try to play off him in that way.
Mm. It's either going to be an unknown or it's going to be someone else. Like, having seen What If, which is coming out in cinemas later this month, Daniel Radcliffe actually turns out he can act. And
he's really good.
Really, he is really, really good, good in What If. He leaves all that Harry Potter tics and mannerisms behind.
If he was in this, though, and it may have been quite jarring to see Harry Potter in it. Do you know that kind of
thing? Yeah, I think we've got over seeing Harry Potter
so
in
too.
Films.
I think Horns will be the one that will
He's not wearing the glasses. His hair is different, and he's playing very different roles than Harry Potter. So I actually would have been quite happy to see him.
I could probably lived it. I'd lived with it. I probably would have been better.
After you see What If, you'll see what I mean.
Okay. But The Rover, I think Dave Michaud is going to make better films than this.
And
he will continue to make. I think he's a fine director, and his eye is superb. I found out yesterday from somebody on Twitter that this was written years before Animal Kingdom. And It shows in that regard. In the same way, you know, what's the follow-up to Bruges?
Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah, that feels like it's written
beforehand.
Beforehand.
Yeah. And was never finished.
It feels that way. And it really a little bit, this has not saying yet, but nearly the same problems that Seven Psychopaths has. But it feels like a first film, whereas Animal Kingdom feels like a second film. It feels like a progression, if you know what I mean. So like he'll make better films.
Guy Pearce is outstanding. Pattinson is miscast.
Yeah.
Okay. So on to the special section of the podcast. And so
for special people.
Yes, for special people. And so we're talking about what's on in the cinemas that's not, you know, that's not a new release, but more of a sort of festival or anything like that. So today, we're going to start with Hollywood Babylon, which is starting on Saturday. The first film is on Saturday. It's said they're basically Hollywood Babylon is brilliant. They show eclectic films.
Very,
very, very strange movies.
Eclectic's not always a compliment, though.
No, but
it's like unique.
Yeah. To be honest, they've shown stuff before that it's crap, but it's knowing crap. People love it because it's crap.
Yeah, if they show The Toxic Avenger, I'm right there.
If they show Roadhouse, I am in.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I've been to some of them before as well. They showed Wake and Fright there. They showed, that's not that. Possession. With Sam Neill and Isabelle Adjani.
Lord.
Freaky!
Lord. I did love Sam Neill for about 20 minutes in the
he's
90s
not meant
after
to be
Jurassic Park.
He's not meant to
Jurassic
be
Park!
But he can't act in any way.
He's but not
he
in a horrible
in a hat,
way.
Though.
He's just very still.
Great in a hat.
Oh, I'm telling you.
He's very still.
That's something like his wife would say. I know he can't act, but he looks good in a hat, though. You have to give him that.
Hey.
As the director's out there.
I give him credit, not least because he follows me on Twitter. So.
What? Woo! Sam Neill follows you on Twitter? I'm so jealous.
Thank you.
I can live with not being followed, Sam.
Oh.
Like Barack Obama.
Hi, hello. What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got Mike Figgis.
We have Mark Cousins. So that's I like that.
I have Stephen Fry.
I have William Friedkin.
Which I don't know why, because I'm really not that interesting.
Really?
Very new.
Yeah,
Stephen. I think you're fascinating.
Oh, I'll give you that tenor after this.
Thanks.
Right, come on. Let's round this up. Come on, let's just on this. Come on.
Jason,
you can do the mutual appreciation side of the afterwards.
You have
the circle list. Jerk is after the show.
Okay.
Yes.
The Last Dragon. I have no idea what that is. I looked up today, but I've never heard of it.
It's about The Last Dragon.
Yeah.
They always do that. They put a description in the title.
Right.
There's a double bill of The Breakfast Club and Real Genius.
Nice.
Real Genius has Val Kilmer in it. I've never seen it.
Breakfast Club
is brilliant, but I still have a problem with them. Makeover and Ali Sheedy. Ali Sheedy was amazing before they made her.
She was gorgeous. I had
Leave
such
Ali
a crush on Ali Sheedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible.
But don't you forget about me.
Yeah.
Or for some great lines of, you know. I got a question. Does Barry Manilow know you raped his wardrobe?
Hey. For inspiring Pitch Perfect, we need to get his kudos as well.
It's great. Yeah. It's great.
It is.
And then Legend.
Ooh. Legend!
You know what? Yes. I would say it's not one of Ridley Scott's finest hours, but there's a lot of not finest hours from Ridley Scott these days. So.
Tim Curry as the devil.
Tim Curry can do
that's all we need.
I know we did,
because of Robin Singh, we didn't do any movie news, but can we just mention, while we're talking about Ridley Scott, the whole thing about Exodus, is it?
Exodus, Gods
and King. His problems he's having with all the white guys being he's being Moses and whatnot, and all the lower caste slaves being black.
Ooh,
there's real issues.
There's your family racism right there.
But it's set in Egypt. Like, back in biblical times.
Christian Baal white.
Granted, the Egyptians aren't white, but Egyptians would be fairer skinned than the Nubians who they would have had as slaves who would have been black. So there is.
So what you're saying
Africa,
is he's a
they were not white.
They weren't white, but they were fairer than.
Yeah, fairer, but they're not like me.
Joke. Yeah, no, they're not.
That's a great joke, sorry.
We just trod along.
You missed it. It was a fundamentalist Christian Bale. That was. That's a terrible meeting. That was very good.
Thank you.
Anyway,
so what I'm saying is that at that time in Egypt, there would have been a system where you would have had. The Egyptians, native Egyptians, who, granted, they're not white, but
they're not Christian Bale.
But they're not Christian Bale, but that the Nubians, who would have been actual slaves, would have been, like, black. They would have been much darker than...
Than Joel Edgerton, say.
Yeah, so.
Or Sigourney Weaver.
Or Elizabeth Taylor, if we're going down that road.
Shambles true. Written all over them.
It won't be Prince of Egypt.
It has this gold sheen of honors, which is just very odd. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Stop making movies. Anyway, move on.
No, keep making movies, but stop making shitty ones.
Yeah. You're asking a lot.
Prometheus 2. Come on.
Listen, stop.
No, I will not stand for that.
Oh, horrible.
Don't even start
your thing. Do not. That is such
potential.
There are
still people talking about this as if, like, you know, people haven't understood that it's a masterpiece and we're revisiting Shadow People. You're all wrong.
I'd just like to point out that there's a disc.
And Charlize Theron runs in that straight line.
And they run in a straight line. If there's a fucking disc rolling after you, you turn!
We're officially in R-rated territory now.
No, you complete me on that one.
You have Idris Elba, God love him, and he sacrifices himself for absolutely no reason.
Because he's the noble dark-skinned chap. That's what they do.
And you've also got Michael Fassbender going, touch, 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 touch. Is that yours? I'm going to touch it. Touch, 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 touch.
It's a moment of silence for Prometheus.
But there is one, there's a friend of mine.
You can't do it, moms.
I am not giving that piece of crap a moment of silence. That gorgeously photographed piece of crap.
Beautiful. Gorgeous, yeah.
But a friend of mine thinks it's better.
Let's go to the cave and touch this.
No, it's aliens.
Fassbender, how did you get in here?
It's not as good as aliens, but I don't like aliens. We're back to James Cameron.
Oh, no.
Oh.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Hollywood Babylon.
Yeah. Legend and Return to Oz.
As sequels go,
of course it's not going to compare to the original, but it's surprisingly good.
The Wheelers, dude, seriously? The Wheelers? Oh my god.
I haven't seen it, so this is the perfect time to see.
Give it a watch.
On a big screen. Yeah.
They scarred my young childhood.
Yep, so
Robin Williams saved me with Aladdin and stuff, thank god.
So these are on the Lighthouse from this weekend and running through September and October. So. Yep, so I'm going to leave it there for the week. Thank you very much. Thanks to our special guest, Miss Brogan Hicks.
Hey.
And we'll join you all again next week.
Bye.